Suzanne. So I'm Danielle York, and I work for a nonprofit consulting division of the Bronfman Philanthropies called 2164. And my co-presenter, Sarah Abbott, will introduce herself in just a minute. Does your mic work?
Hello.
Yeah,
yes.
It does. Great.
Hi, I'm Sarah Abbott, and I work with an organization called Resource Generation, and we organize young people with wealth to use our resources for social change, and young people's 18 through 35.
And at 2164, we work with families and organizations who are interested in working multi-generationally. One of the things I think both of our organizations have realized is that the ability to be in relationship with one another and make decisions well and be effective in the work that we're doing together requires that requires that we learn to listen well, and also that we have an opportunity to tell our story well, which requires knowing ourselves and also knowing the people that we are connected to. There's this experience that I think all of us have had of talking to somebody and knowing that they're not listening to us. And it is one of those things that happens in human relationships that really can break down the opportunity for connection. So I wondered if you all would share with us an experience you've had when somebody really listened to you and what that felt like and what they might have done. Anybody here have an experience where somebody listened to them? You have all been listened to. You all have not. Yes.
On a date, one of my third date with my now husband, it was my birthday. And on our first date, I had mentioned I had my favorite jazz album. And it was out of print, and he found it for me on vinyl and had it shipped overnight so we could have it for our date. And I looked at him and I said, "You listened to me. You heard what I had said, and indeed it happened."
And what did that do to your relationship?
It made me pay attention.
And you married him?
Yes.
<That's good. laughs> And what did it make you pay attention to?
This was somebody who was interested enough in me that he listened to what I wanted and what I thought I wanted and he helped me get it.
So this is a really positive experience in listening. And your husband was listening to something that was about jazz and about this woman he's interested in, and it's rosy and glowy and I'm sure lots of lovely things. Has anyone ever had the experience of being listened to when you had something really hard to say to somebody? And you had the opportunity to say it and somebody took the time or energy to really listen to you? Okay, has anybody ever broken up with anybody? Okay, right. So unless you left them a post-it note, sent them a text, or put it on Facebook, you probably had to tell them, "I don't want to be in relationship with you anymore." Or has anybody had to say something to a business partner, or to somebody sitting on a board, or had to fire an employee, or had to tell your son or daughter that you don't appreciate something that they're doing or you want them to make a change? Those are conversations that are not always easy to have, but oftentimes they are experiences where somebody can really hear what you're saying. Has anybody had that kind of experience?
A doctor who's a friend who I've known for a long time, and
where I really saw it was that as I was telling him my story that has happened to me in the last year, he started to cry. So, and then at the end he said he was proud of me. So, I mean, that was true compassion. My husband passed away in March of last year. He had had diabetes. He was in the hospital 13 times the year prior. My dog ended up with bone cancer. I had the flu for 5 weeks. My finger got infected from a rose from a thorn bush that my husband had planted. Aww. I've canceled 5 trips. I mean, I just go on, and I have a business that is an international business that's extremely stressful. So when he started to cry, and then I talked about wanting to establish a foundation in my mother's honor, and that was very, very touching.
And what did it feel like to have somebody listen to you like that? Very touching.
Well, the compassion and the empathy, but what, the tears, that wasn't just a friend. That was, you know, I see him once a year. I've known him for 20 years, but yes, it was, it drew me in, and the trust that was established.
Right. I mean, I think both of these examples are ways to kind of think about the power of listening. I think we spend a lot of time at meetings like this or around our board tables thinking about what's our message and how do we want to tell people, right? We think about it, communication going this way. And one of the hardest things about the work that we do is how do you listen? How do you listen to your fellow funders, to your grantee partners, to your mom and your cousin and your sister and your spouse when the conversation isn't always jazzy, rosy, glowy, but sometimes can be difficult. But those are the opportunities when I think relationships are born. So we're going to talk today and give you guys an opportunity to really think about building or to practice and build listening skills. And we're going to do that using a tool that we developed at 2164 called Listen and Respond Skillfully to Others. Pretty clear.
Do you all have in front of you?
You all have one of these in front of you. It looks like this. So we're going to start with this, and then we're going to spend some time talking about money. We're going to use a tool that's also on your table called Money Messages, and this is a tool that we developed and we're inspired to develop in our work with Resource Generation, Sarah's organization, because we know that money is one of those topics that is very emotionally charged. It is one of those conversations that oftentimes isn't easy to do. So we're going to start with listening and give you guys some practice that, and then we're going to give you an opportunity to tell a story about money and then to practice what you learned in your listening training as the listener. So we're going to first learn to listen, and then you're going to get an opportunity to tell a story and be a listener around things that are emotionally charged. So we're going to start with this, which you have in front of you. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about rapport as we start. You know, rapport describes a feeling that exists between two or more people, one of harmony, affinity, and connection. And that's what the goal of good listening is. What we wanted to be able to do in this is to give you guys a sense on the third page here of ways that you can do this. Does anybody know what encouragers are? Yes. Okay. Yes, I see. I shaking my head. Yes, I understand. I hear you. I'm showing you with my body that I'm listening to you. I'm also putting my body in a place that you can see me and that I can see you. You can see that I am organizing myself so that I can take as much of you in here with me. If I was turned like this and looking over my shoulder, my ability to hear you would probably be the same because my ears still turn to you, but you may not feel that I can hear you. This is like when we are on the phone and you can tell somebody is looking at their email. Even though you can't see their body, you know that they're using it in a way that's not listening to you. We can feel that, and you can hear that in the way that people, you can hear it in the way that they're expressing themselves. There's also reflective listening, saying back to somebody, I hear you. This is what I heard you say. Did I get this right? Kind of using an I statement as a way to say, I understood that this is what you're telling me. Did I hear this right? And giving them an opportunity to affirm or correct what it is that you just heard. And finally, skillful questions, which I just modeled a little bit also. This idea of open-ended questions. How do we not just ask questions that require yes or no answers, but instead, tell me what you think about the dine around last night, rather than saying, was it fun? Yes or no, right? So this gives you an opportunity to show up and for me to be able to hear you. And also the possibility is greater for me to learn more about you and for you to share more. I'm not asking you around fun. You could have told me the food was delicious or it was so cold. It could be much more than just my very pointed question around fun. So none of this is earth-shattering, and I don't think any of you came here just to hear me tell you about these three things, but we wanted to give you an opportunity to actually practice it. So Sarah and I are going to model this a little bit, And then we're going to give you an opportunity to go and find and meet somebody new and have a conversation and practice this yourselves. So, the lovely Sarah.
Ready?
I'm ready.
Hello, Danielle.
Hello, Sarah.
How's it going?
Today's going good.
Great.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah.
So, one of the things when we're having a hard conversation is how do you get present, right? How do we kind of organize ourselves so that we're here, we've taken a deep breath, we know this is something that we're going to talk about, and we're going to talk about something hard. Or not so hard, but maybe something that isn't the easiest, most casual conversation. So taking deep breaths, seeing each other with our eyes, noticing if we have any tension in our face. She does not. She's very relaxed. And her body position is organized to me in such a way that I can see her and she can see me, and we don't have to be quite like this, but we're open to each other. Arms aren't crossed, legs aren't crossed, we're not turned away from each other. And we're modeling the same sort of physical presence for one another. So do you want to start talking and I will listen for you?
Sure, yeah.
So Sarah, tell me about something that's going on in your life.
Well, I moved to New York about 5 months ago from Minneapolis, and it's a big shift. I grew up in Minnesota, and my family's there, and a lot of my community's there, but the office for resource generation is in New York, and my partner also lives in New York. So I was being drawn there, and it was the right thing to do, and it's hard to move, you know, it's hard to make big transitions.
Why is it hard? What's hard about it? What feels hard about it?
Well, you know, I really value being close to family and having, you know, a broad community of people, and I think rebuilding that and starting over in a new place is challenging for me.
I appreciate that. It makes a lot of sense. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
So simple and so easy. So we're going to give you guys an opportunity to practice this also. So you have a guide, an activity guide on page 4. So first what you're going to do is you're going to get up, move your bodies, and you're going to go find somebody you don't know. And I want you to practice having a conversation. So let me give you one more instruction before I send you on your way. Sorry, guys. Let me give you one more thing. I want you to tell a story. Each of you tell a story about something that's challenging for you. Hey, guys, give me 1 second. I forgot to give you the rest of your instruction. I want you to each take turns telling your partner a story about something that's challenging for you in family philanthropy, something that's happened to you in the past month that has been challenging. So I want you to practice these three things of using eye contact, asking questions, and reflective listening. But I want you guys to each take turns doing that. So find a partner, somebody you don't know, tell them a story about something that's challenging for you about family philanthropy, move your bodies. And then I'll tell you when to switch. So go ahead and find somebody. You're gonna have 5 minutes for each. So I'll tell you when 5 minutes is over. Okay, okay, everybody.
I know it's hard to stop talking.
It is nice to see so much energy in the room, and it's nice to be in a room that isn't freezing cold.
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys did a lot of talking. How was the listening?
Good.
Excellent. Very descriptive.
What was good about it?
Thank you. What was good about it?
Physically encouraging. We went down different paths of conversation, supportive suggestions. A lot of give and take.
What did you all notice about your bodies when you were listening? Well, what did it feel like leaning in?
What did it feel like leaning in?
Mm-hmm. What did it feel like when you were leaning in? Did you feel, was that unconscious that you were leaning in, or did you catch yourself leaning in? Did you want to lean more?
Yeah, there were moments I caught myself leaning in, but it was because I was trying to engage, be there.
Yeah. Nice. How about nodding? How was that?
Good.
She's nodding. Great. Who was surprised by kind of being conscientious about listening? Anybody feel more self-aware or self-conscious by kind of thinking, I should be nodding, I should be leaning in? Yes?
I felt a little uncomfortable, actually, physically uncomfortable, because I was here, and what I wanted to do was to turn my chair around.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to interrupt the flow of the conversation to get up.
Interesting. Interesting. What did it feel like having somebody listen to you?
It felt really great. I felt like she was interested in what I was saying. And it made me, it kind of reaffirmed that my story was connecting with her. She was connecting with it. So it made me more open to kind of like let it, let the conversation continue and be more at ease and really expressing what I was trying to get out. I didn't feel inhibited.
What do you think about the fact that you were talking to somebody you didn't know?
Yeah, so it didn't feel awkward. It felt very, I didn't feel strange about sharing with her this, which I should have. You know, I think about it.
About you guys, but whenever I come to conferences like this or have an opportunity to talk to people that I don't know, sometimes I'm willing to say things that are harder for me to say to the people that maybe I should be saying them to.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So the reason we picked this topic about something that's hard for you in family philanthropy is because you talked to a stranger about it, right? So you weren't telling your dad or your executive director or your program officer about this thing you told somebody else. And we did that as a way for you to practice the skill of telling and of listening. So there's probably, all those people probably have difficult things to say to you too. And what we wanted you to have an experience of is how do we offer that opportunity to listen to those people and to make yourself available for those difficult conversations and to be the person, if you so choose, to listen to that. How do you think this skill might help you in your work? How might you use this?
All the time.
All the time.
And listening, I'm listening not only to what is said, but for me, I think listening to what is not said.
Listening to what is not said.
Yes.
Yes.
I think something that we've done that's been helpful is like you actually timing it out a little bit in terms of group conversations or staff meetings or family meetings, because some people are better at listening than others, and so it's usually very like there's patterns of who listens in the organization and who talks, and so actually setting it up to be able, we're going to trade 5 minutes each, and you actually have a timer, and then you're like, okay, switch, next spot, you know, and that is great because it equalizes things where I think for me, we can get into our usual patterns around you're the person that listens and I'm the person that talks, and I'm going to talk to you for 10 minutes and I'm going to ask you one question. Later, you're going to talk to one. You know.
I think there's also an interesting experience in having time constraints. When you can only talk for 5 minutes, you know that you've got to get it all out in 5 minutes. So your ability sometimes to speak more effectively is heightened. We get an opportunity. We know that you only get 10 minutes. I can't talk to you for 30. Rob?
I think it's a way to think. It's a way to get to someone sometimes just needs a sounding board to think and talk out loud, mm-hmm. and then the idea comes. So just being the person who receives that information, even without sharing back, mm-hmm. is useful, and I've used that a lot, especially last year.
Definitely.
How do you use it? Can you, and can everybody hear Rob? Can you say?
Here, I'll give you a microphone.
Can you say how you've used it? You said you've used it a lot in the past 6 months. Would you share with us how you're using it?
I work with a private foundation as well as family offices that
deal with somewhat complex grantees in the earliest stages of their philanthropy, so early stage philanthropy. A lot of times the programs aren't fully developed when we show up. And even though we show up with money and support, it's not necessarily, the idea isn't necessarily fully formed. And so in many cases, I will sit across from the person, as we were talking about, who we're investing in and in their idea to help them think about exactly how this is going to roll out without saying a word. Because they will already figure out what was wrong with it if they have the ability to speak about it and listen to it without actually saying anything. So we do that first, and then after that, I usually have questions that come of it that just help move around what exactly they're trying to think about. That's, we've doing that. We have 4 or 5 new grantees in the last 6 months, and we spend a lot of time with them face to face. You can't do it over the phone. You can't do it through Skype. You can't do anything. You have to be in front of them.
I think that's a really interesting point about chemistry and human connection. I mean, we've said this a couple of times over the past couple of days, but I think there's a reason why all of you flew to San Jose, California to come and sit in cold, dark rooms with people that you don't know. There's something about being physically present that changes our ability to connect and hear each other and to listen well. And I think that that's something to be really mindful. The idea of institutionalizing this practice of listening, I think, is very interesting organizationally. And in a family, I know that there are lots of families, I do this with my own family at home, where we ask a question at the beginning of dinner. Everybody gets a turn to decide what the question is. So my 2.5-year-old comes up with great, interesting questions, which are different from my questions, which are different from my husband's questions, but everybody gets a chance to be curious, which is part of listening. Everybody gets a chance to be a leader by asking, and then everybody gets a chance to say something. And that sort of practice, I think, gives us a very palatable way to begin to teach listening and to experience listening. And because I think we spend a lot of time and resources in talking, right? We do a lot of that work, so.
And something I love about the 2164 tools is that they're so clear and simple, and I bet a lot of you have some listening skills, right? I bet everyone in here has been in a conversation in which you've listened before. But I think having it written out and actually having an exercise that you could go through with your family really points out some key things that for some of us maybe are really clear, for some people maybe it's a new idea. But I, with all your tools, I really love the way that you can take them to your family and you could actually go through this exercise and improve the way that people are interacting.
Yeah, I think that, thank you for saying that, and I think, you know, our goal in all of this is to give you a sense of an opportunity for intentionality around listening. So thinking about, what do I want to do this week to practice listening? Let's just say I'm gonna set a goal for myself, and I'm gonna sit on a plane or a train next to somebody and ask a question and really try to practice listening. Or I'm gonna go home and ask my dad a question and really try to listen to him because he is so hard to listen to. Mm-hmm. And see what it's like if I really try to use these three skills. And think about, what does it feel like physically and emotionally? How did that conversation end, or what did I learn that was different? What was the same? How might I do this in a different way next time? So we offer you that as an opportunity to continue this practice. I think we can listen lots of times, but creating or being more intentional about listening was what we hope to achieve. So we're gonna give you another opportunity to listen using this tool, which is on your table also. So if you each wanna grab this envelope, raise your hand if you don't have one and you need one. It's called Money Messages. It's a silver envelope. So you guys picked a story that was difficult about family philanthropy. So now we're going to talk about the super taboo topic of money.
It sounds kind of scary, Danielle. I might just leave.
Okay. So, Sarah, can you talk a little bit about, so this is a tool that 2164 co-created through our work with Resource Generation. Can you talk a little bit about Resource Generation and how this tool fits into the work that you do?
Definitely. So, as I said before, Resource Generation organizes young people ages 18 to 35 with wealth to use our resources for social change. And we are a peer network for young people with wealth. It's people with family foundations, people with inherited wealth, people who will inherit wealth in the future. And a big part of our programming whenever we get together, whether that's conferences or people getting together in groups in their local cities, is actually talking about money and class, right? Which is this topic that we in our culture learn is super taboo. You're not supposed to talk about money, you're not supposed to talk about class. I think I'd actually never really talked about money and my family until I went to a Resource Generation conference, and that was the first time that I'd ever told the story of what money had looked like in my family, going back generations in my immediate family. What were the dynamics around money? How much money was there? Actually using numbers. That's something we definitely learn you're not supposed to do, right? So what we found is that when we create spaces for our members to actually start telling those stories, it creates space for a lot of personal growth and transformation. And the ways that we've found that people can really start to move forward and take action as donors, as people who are on their family philanthropy boards, is really, people are really empowered to do those things by actually getting to start talking about money in class. I know for me, when I first found Resource Generation and got involved in programming, I had a lot of confusing feelings about money. I was feeling guilty that my family had money, sort of confused about how to talk about it, noticing differences between myself and friends in terms of how much money our families had and how that impacted our lives. And when I started talking about that with other people, I really started to, I think just when I figured out what those things meant for myself, feel a lot more grounded in all of my relationships and in my decision making. So, yeah, go ahead.
And I can add to that experience. So for me, my experience growing up with money was different from Sarah. So I grew up in a very, a really lovely family, but without lots of family resources. Very good resources. My parents sent me to college and stuff. But getting a sense of what it is that I inherited from the message about money mm-hmm. was very powerful to me to think about how does that show up in my life today? How does it inform the way I spend money, the way I have conversations with my husband about money, the way I save money? And then how are those messages that I inherited, how do they show up? And then how might I want to let go of some of those messages that aren't working for me? Think about in my work with families as I help them think about money for themselves, what's my bias or opportunity from where I sit as a professional in this? Because I too come from a place of understanding about the allocation of resources. Mm-hmm. The reason we talk about the messages around money at a philanthropy conference is because philanthropy is the allocation of resources. It's about making decisions around how you might take resources and allocate them. And resources can be love, food, money, time. There's lots of different resources. And being, I think, aware and intentional about messages that you've received about money and resources and how that may impact your ability to work with others and to do that well is a very powerful tool. So I think regardless of kind of where you orient yourself on a personal wealth scale, messages around money, kind of financial awareness of the emotional content of money is really powerful. So we're going to give you guys an opportunity to think about that for yourself. What's the message that I inherited about money? We all have these assumptions. They were modeled for us. Either you watched your mom save every penny because she grew up in the Depression and that's just what they do, and you watched your uncle buy Porsches and crash them and buy another one. You know, these are different messages we have about money. And so I want you to open up this envelope if you haven't already. Inside, you're going to find two cards and two stickers. What we want you to do is read the messages on the back side of this card. This is the front, and this is the back. And we want you to choose a message that speaks to you about a message you inherited about money growing up. Where did it come from, and how did that message play out in your life? And I want you to write that message on one of these stickers. You're going to talk about this with somebody you don't know, so write a message that you want to talk about, and that you're going to answer for your partner, or your partner's going to ask you, so you'll answer for them. What does this message mean? Where did it come from? And how does that message play out in my life? What you're going to be doing as the curious listener is modeling encouragers, eye contact, open-ended questions. I want you to practice what we just learned when you swap with your partner. So Sarah and I are going to model this for you now. And when you write down this message, you're going to put this somewhere where other people can see it. I always put this on my heart or on my chest so that somebody can see. So we'll show you what you guys are going to do. So Sarah, can you tell me about your money message and what does it mean to you? Can you tell me what it is and what it means to you?
Yeah, so I chose pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and I drew little boots on my sticker just to have some fun. Yeah.
Where does it come from?
Well, I think this message, I think it comes from a lot of places, but one place that I think about in my own life is my dad. He is a small businessman and has a business in the glass industry. And it's definitely like a central part of his identity that he is an entrepreneur and a self-made man. And he's, you know, worked hard over his life to start his business and to make money. And I think I got this message, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, definitely from him. And to me, it means, you know, it's this idea that whoever you are, it's your job as an individual to pull yourself up. I think that there's both some good things in that, and I think that there's also some bad things that are happening. So I think something good is that, you know, I learned to be someone who works and who works hard, and that's something I really admire about my dad, and I feel like I've definitely learned from him. And I feel like something that's a little deceiving about the message, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, is this idea that everybody is on an equal playing field, and even that everybody has boots,
right?
And we know that some people don't have boots,
right?
And that we're not actually on an equal playing field. And I think this message, something that I've had to unlearn, is the idea that, that I have as equal a chance as everybody else. And I think as I've learned more about inequality in the world, I've realized, not everybody has the same opportunity to pull yourself up. And that's something that we need to address in the world.
Great. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
So that's what you guys are going to do. You're going to have a chance to use the second label when we're done, but I'm going to invite you to now take 3 minutes and review these messages. Choose a message and write it down on one of these stickers, something that speaks to you about a message you heard growing up, that either somebody told you or that you saw modeled for you. To build on Sarah's example, the message that I heard growing up was be grateful. It wasn't be grateful, it was be grateful. And so think about that when you read these messages. There are many different connotations to this. Think about who you learned this message from, how you learned it, and how it shows up in your life today. Be prepared to discuss that. So you'll have 3 minutes. Go ahead and get started, and we'll let you guys know when you need to get up and find a partner. I feel like we should have music. Anybody need more time? Okay. Well, why don't we just go ahead and switch? So if you could get up, find somebody you don't know, bring your message with you, bring this card, and I want you to practice using these questions. Use your listening skills and ask your partner. Be very curious. What does the message mean to you? Where does it come from? How did the message show up in my life? You'll have 5 minutes, and then you'll switch talking. If you haven't already done your question asking and you've told your story, it's time to switch. So you guys have had a chance to think about the message that you inherited, and you got to hear from somebody else about the message they inherited about money. I want you to just take 2 minutes for yourself and look back at this set of messages. You've just had a chance to talk about what's come to you. Think about what you want to share with others about money. What's the message you want others to observe or to hear from the experience that you're living about money? What do you want your kids or grandkids or fellow board members or grantee partners to know about you or to understand about you about money? Sarah's going to share hers with us. So your message growing up was?
Pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
What's the message you want others to know from you?
So I chose, you are able to share your resources.
What does that mean?
Well, earlier you mentioned that resources can mean so many things, time, money, food, love. And I think that there are so many ways that I have learned to be scarce with resources, that there aren't enough, that I have to save them all for myself. Mm. And something that I really strive to put out into the world is that I have enough resources, I can share them, and that actually everybody, no matter who you are, has some kind of resource that you can share. Mm. And I think I've seen in my life the ways that when I am acting in that way and putting that message out, I think it really helps me live the life that I want and build community and bring more people and things into my life.
So what are you doing? How do you want to do that? How do you want to communicate that to others? Mm,
that's a good question. I think one way is by modeling, right? By hosting and making food for people and by being a generous donor. And I think by talking to other people about giving, mm-hmm. And even sharing with people, hey, I'm really excited about this organization. Let's give to it together. Those are a couple examples.
That's great. Thank you. So this is what we want to give you guys an opportunity to do. You're going to use the other sticker in your envelope, like Sarah did. Write the message that you want others to hear from you. If you already have the message on that you inherited, put this other sticker on next to it or on the other side of your chest, or cover it up, whatever works for you. What's the message that you want others to hear from you? That if instead of walking around with a name tag or a lanyard, you had this message as a way to identify who you are. And then turn to the person next to you once you've picked that message and ask them, what does this message mean to you and how will you communicate it to others? Those two questions that are on the bottom of this card. So you have take 2 minutes and choose the message, write it down, and then turn to the person next to you or find a partner if you're not sitting next to someone.
And try to choose a different partner this time.
Choose a different partner, yeah. Everybody know what they're doing? Okay, you have 2 minutes. Person next to you, those two questions.
And if you don't have a partner, I can be your partner. I think someone else came in.
This woman in the back. She's going to partner with these other two women.
Thank you.
want to start wrapping up? Start wrapping up your conversations. Start wrapping up, coming back to our places. I love it. Come on back to your places. Okay. Stop talking. I'm so glad you're still talking, but
time to stop.
You can meet at lunch and continue this conversation.
I know there's so much to talk about. Money.
Money.
We can talk about it forever.
We can.
We're talking about it for 4 days.
We've been talking about money for 4 days. That's right. So this was great. You guys have a lot of energy, which I love to see. How was this for you? I see heads nodding. Good. How was it? You can do better. You've been talking your buns off.
I know, everyone was just talking so much.
Yes.
I thought it was great. I've done this before, but every time I do it, I seem to see new things in it, and as I'm talking about it, and then I just love meeting different people and hearing what other people's messages were. I mean, I think my messages were so clear that part of me was thinking, oh, everyone must get these same messages, and then meeting people who have totally different messages they received and being really curious to hear about how that's impacted them, how it showed up in their life, what it's meant to them, and I've never done this part where we create a new message that we want to share with others, and that was really powerful.
Can you tell us your message?
Sure.
Or one of your messages, you can choose, just to tell us which one it is.
Yeah, I guess the message I just created, the message I received, inherited, was don't ever talk about your money and give back. You know, it's your responsibility to give back. One from my mother, one from my father. And the one I just created now is money is transient and there's no need to try and hold on to it, which speaks kind of to what you were talking about, Sarah, of just sharing, being a model of sharing,
How do you reconcile those messages, what you what you received and where you want to go. How, what is that like? Think about it, thinking about the difference between them.
Yeah, well, I know my father's, and it came differently because my father grew up in a poor family, and my mother's where the wealth, inherited wealth came from. So my father was, it's nobody's business financially. Don't ever talk about your money. So for me, it's been a whole journey of being able to talk about it and being transparent, and that being a part of my storytelling and what's healing for me and seems to be really healing around for other people. And then the message from my mother and my grandmother was being, to whom much is given, much is expected. Mm. And trying to weave out some of the guilt tripping in there. And, you know, I think like what you said, the tone, to whom much is given, much is expected.
Right.
So
right.
Wanting to give back, and that is a powerful message because it's realizing I've been blessed and I want to share that and give back, but, you know, with some loving kindness in there. So not exactly sure, but my new message is definitely evolving, and this was the first time I wrote something down about it. And I think it's very multifaceted, but ongoing and really interesting to see.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Who else? Yes.
It was really interesting, and I think that getting to read the whole list gives you insight into some of the things that other people might have grown up with, mm-hmm. some which never would have occurred to me as the potential message. Mm-hmm. But for me, and I think I feel lucky about this, my growing up message and the message that I hope to continue are pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. And although there might be a little guilt associated with it, it is, you know, you have a responsibility to give back. And I think there are lots of intricacies to that and lots of different ways to both give and receive that message. But to me, that's the most important thing. And I am glad, even though it's in different ways and for different reasons, that I feel comfortable with the message that I was given. And I hope that my kids don't think that I make them feel too guilty.
So a question about that, because that's interesting. How, after having this experience and thinking about this, I hope my kids don't feel too guilty. Do you want to ask your kids? Are you more curious about what the message is that they've?
The truth is, we've discussed it. I think that we try really hard to have open conversations with them about it. I think that as they've gotten older, and they're both, my two older ones are in college and my younger one's still in high school, so there's lots of time. But they, the two older ones, I think, now that they're in college, really have, I think, an understanding that they hadn't before. One of the things that we were just talking about was how much things have changed in terms of the disparity of wealth. So when I went to college 25 years ago, some people had work study, lots of people didn't. It wasn't now, my two kids are in college and almost everybody is on work study. And so there's this real knowledge that the few kid, my son says, you know, has two other friends who don't do work study. And so, you know, this idea that wealth is so much more obvious, even if you're not crashing Ferraris, you know, that it's just much clearer. So, I mean, I think that as a Jewish mother, I have to worry that my kids are gonna feel guilty about something.
As a good Catholic, I hear that loud and clear. A Reformed Catholic, I should say. Yeah, okay. Who else? Did anybody feel like this was awkward or hard or uncomfortable? Yes? Can you say why?
I am not a person of wealth, and so I can handle this conversation about money with a somewhat stranger, but I think it's indicative that the topic of money for many people, wealthy or not, is difficult. And so it brought up a lot of deep stuff that I was trying to quash down a little bit, you know, to maintain my composure and continue the conversation.
So yeah. How was your partner in listening to you when you had this, oh, you're gonna talk. How was it with somebody who was practicing listening skills to talk about something that was hard?
She's great.
She's great. Isn't that lovely?
A lot of the traits that you encouraged us, or a lot of the behaviors you encouraged us to use, she, I think, comes by naturally, and she exudes a very warm, caring personality, so it's very easy to talk to her.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's lovely. Anybody else? Anybody have a conversation where their message was different? They have the same messages like be grateful, and it meant two different things to you as partners? Yes? Partner?
Well, one of the messages was, let's see, it's your responsibility to give back. And so while I agree with it's your responsibility to give back, I had another thought about that because I grew up in a family, my grandfather had the first African-American hospital in the South. And so there was a lot of pressure in my family for us to be doctors, for us to be entrepreneurs. And so my family wanted me to go to medical school and that was expected. But fortunately for everyone in America, I didn't become a doctor. I was really not good at it. And I felt, I felt like I'd never be able to give back. I felt like a failure. I'd never be able to give anything of value to my community if I was not a doctor. And so what I've learned from it's my responsibility to give back is that it was my responsibility to find out what brought me joy and where I could flourish so that I was full enough to give back and not feeling that it was this rigid responsibility to give back in a certain way.
Right.
So for me, when I say it's my responsibility to give back, it's my responsibility to be joyful so that I can give back in a joyful way, in a way that is impactful, because you can't be impactful if it's not done with a full heart and intent. So,
see what I mean?
Right. Yeah. You chose really well. Who was surprised? Who had any sort of surprise? I mean, I heard in the back this idea of never having a sense of that I had this message. There's some clarity in the experience. Would you share what you shared with me?
I just had never thought about what the message was.
I had never thought what my message was until you go through the list, and then it seems fairly obvious. And I'm happy to say that it was a good message and that I'm continuing the same similar message to my currently in my personal life and also in my work life. So.
Who wants to share a little bit about what it was like listening to somebody talk about something that was hard, either the message they inherited or the message that they grew up with, going back to this listening skill? What did it feel like being a listener when somebody was talking to you about something that was maybe challenging in the way that they've learned about money?
So for me, being the listener made me realize, even though, the stories that I was listening to were very different from my own experience, that I could still very much relate to what my partner was saying and feel compassion for that lived experience that I was learning about. So in that way, I felt you know, that we were building rapport and connection.
So I think this brings up this interesting perspective, because we sit in this room as people who are in the field of philanthropy, the field of giving resources to people who need resources. How might this experience, this idea or awareness of your money message, change the way you think about the work that you do, either as a funder or as a trustee, thinking about the people who may not share the same experience you have around resources, or as you are the giver and they are the receiver? How might you change, how might you think a little differently about the work that you're doing, the allocation of resources that you're responsible for? What does any of this have to do with philanthropy? Yes?
Well, I think it just, it
hearing all of these different stories really helps me question my assumptions. And understand that everyone has a very individualized experience. Some of my partners had learned lessons growing up that I had just, it never even occurred to me that anyone would teach these lessons. And so it just really, I think, opened my eyes. And I just feel like the more that we can hear people's stories and listen and be attentive and be empathetic, the more we can really kind of hear what's really going on with people and not come to it with a sense of assumptions or stereotypes.
I think that's such an important point, because I think, money, this is a vehicle in which we transfer value or create opportunities. It kind of embodies a lot of stuff, but it is also assigned a lot of emotional content, and it is with that emotional state that we share money or are compelled to share resources, and it's with that same state that we receive those resources. I don't think it matters what side of the experience you're on, we come to it from that emotional place. That is, money doesn't really have any value except what is assigned to it emotionally. So that was part of why we wanted to host this conversation with you all today. We left you in this envelope a note card, and wanted to give you the last couple minutes of the session as you finish up an opportunity to think about a conversation that you might want to have or a question you might ask, something you might want to do in your life that you have come to realize after having this experience. So we want to thank you for your openness and your honesty and your candor and energy, thank you. And take a couple minutes before you go out and think about what you might do with what you've learned today. Yes, Michael Gast.
If I wanted to get more of either of these tools, how would I do that?
Great question. We have some tools up here at the front if you'd like to come and get them, but you're able to buy money messages. We have a pre-order form in the Resource Lounge in Family Central, so upstairs where the booths are. There's a Next Gen Lounge that Sarah and myself and our colleague, Barbara Taylor, will be in, and so you can come and order them there. And you can always go to 2164.net. Resource Generation has great resources that are available also. Conferences, opportunities to meet. Can you talk a little bit about?
Yep, definitely. If you want to know more about Resource Generation, I'd love to talk to you. And we have a bunch of our resources actually here at the conference in the exhibit area. And we have conferences, we have chapters in cities around the country, and we also have publications. And you can find out more about us on resourcegeneration.org.
Yeah. So come and see us. We're up here afterwards. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks so much.
Give yourself a hand.